Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 750. Coming at you on a Thursday afternoon to continue some projection comparisons on some players that have even different, I guess, variance is the right word. Probably sounds like the right word, seems like the right word. In projections, differences in projections, I should say, to and kind of get our thoughts on that and hoping to break that down. As always, the co-host on the show here, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Yeah, that's a pretty good explanation you gave there. I'd give that a passing grade for sure.
Good. So variance worked. Good. How are things in your world? It's last week you helped host a draft, so we haven't really done any other chatting besides that. How's draft season for you? How's everything else going?
Well, it's been on pause. So my last draft or auction was the Listener League I did on the 23rd, maybe, whatever it was, that night. Yeah. And I'm in a little bit of a lull period here. I was supposed to do a auction this upcoming weekend, but the 500s aren't really filling too well. So I think I'm going to skip out on that one this year, unfortunately. And I'm going to turn that money into a third main event, I think. So that's the plan now. I have three more mains left to go, which will be my final three drafts, plus my home league, of course. But that's the plan for right now. And that won't be until the MTM, Mike the Mouth, New Jersey draft, which will be on the 15th. So about a little over a week from now is my first main event.
That's awesome. Looking forward to that because we usually talk about those drafts on the shows. Like we've done that lately. So looking forward to kind of it's always – some people always go, oh, I don't – you know, no one wants to hear about my teams. I think it's more about the process you went through to get that team. That is very interesting to me. That's where I think like live streams are entertaining from that aspect because you can like literally, especially like Ryan and I do it and others probably do as well, is we're walking you through our thought process essentially. Like here's why we're doing what we're doing and right or wrong, that's where we landed. And I know we've done that with yours before because you use your projection systems and your spreadsheets and everything and kind of piece it all together. And on a big scale of that sort is very, very interesting to see how that all ends. That is for sure. So looking forward to that. Before we get into the projection discussion once again, we have a couple bits of breaking news, and I'm going to throw you a curveball right out the gate, Ben, because as you were talking, some news just dropped, and so we will talk about it here. I saw it in a couple different Discords at the moment, but Grayson Rodriguez has tricep soreness, and Brandon Hyde, the manager of the Orioles, does not expect him to be ready for opening day. So if anybody listened to Breakfast with Bubba, on Thursday morning, we talked about how he was removed from his recent start. Velocity was down. He said he hasn't been going full go, didn't feel right. He wasn't concerned. And I said, I don't believe you as far as I can throw you. That's why I haven't drafted him, because he hasn't stayed healthy, unfortunately. And we're living in an era, unless your name's Zach Greinke, you don't not throw at full potential. That's just not a thing anymore. So when he said that, I'm like, yeah, you don't get that luxury with your injury history to tell me those things. That doesn't work for me. So now this goes down. Now it says it's a soreness again. I think they're doing more imaging and more testing to come in the days here. So this could get worse as we go. But like even Ryan in the chat here loved the 89-mile-an-hour fastballs were by design. Yeah, that's not what we want. So Ben, I'll throw it your way. First off, is Grayson Rodriguez on your draft board right now?
No, based on that news, no. And I'll say, well, I didn't say it at Holiday Inn last night. Well, how's the joke? Like, I'm not a doctor, but I did say it at Holiday Inn last night. Yes, is that the line?
That's the one, yes.
Yeah, I butchered it, of course. It's been a hot start to this little
it's okay. Commentary. I've used that so many times with my dad jokes. Don't you worry.
All right.
I'll take care.
So at least you appreciate it.
Yes.
So this started out with lat soreness, right? That was the first report, I believe, for Grayson. Yep. And now it's tricep. So I think this is going to be diagnosed as the teres major because – the teres major connects from like your back to your arm, and it's along the back. And this is what Joe Ryan had last year, was the teres major.
That's not good.
Yeah, so he's probably out for a while, Grayson. It's unfortunate, but that's my hunch, just based on those two diagnoses or pieces of information that we received. So I had a note in my phone to maybe lower him down, and I changed that as you're talking to Grayson Hurt. So I will have to adjust my rankings accordingly. So I guess the first question would be, is the replacement? And so I was a big fan of Cade Povich last year. So if he got the chance, I'd be a big fan of that. But I'm not sure how the depth chart really lines up for the Orioles right now. I'm not sure if you have an idea.
I was going to kind of throw some ideas out because it's definitely – this is fresh. This just got dropped. Like you got Zach Eflin in the rotation. You got Charlie Morton, Dean Craner, and Sagano. Those four are in. And so then it comes down to does our good buddy get back in the rotation?
Oh no, then? Don't even say it.
Come on, you know what I'm talking about. Is he back? Yeah. Is Albert Suarez back?
Oh, my God.
It seems like he might get the upper hand here.
Those 45 round DC picks would look great for your. I couldn't draft him. I wish I did, maybe.
But I feel like it's going to come down to Albert Suarez versus Cade Povich. Weirdly, it feels like the veteran might get the upper hand there, but kind of to where you sound like you're leaning there, I would hope it was Cade Povich. I was taking early shares of Cade Povich when I thought he was already going to be in the rotation. I love Povich. If he's getting back into the rotation, I might start drafting him even in 12s in late rounds. I love the skill set of Povich. So this will be something to definitely monitor. Again, this just dropped like 10 minutes ago, maybe. And it's just the initial news. We don't even know the depth of it. And no, Ryan is not Trevor Rogers' season.
He has one kneecap right now.
Yeah, he can't even walk. And we know he can't throw to begin with. So without a knee, it's even worse.
He can't throw with two knees, let alone.
Yeah. I think Giancarlo Stanton has a better job throwing right now than Trevor Rogers does. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's Suarez or Povich. I feel like the veteran probably gets the nod here because he was already going to be the long man out of the bullpen. But, man, this would be a great time to see some Cade Povich, like give him some run here. So definitely something that will keep you posted here on Breakfast with Bubba. Bubba in the Bloom, you know, the 12 places I talk. You'll get more of that somewhere along the line. All right, back to your regularly scheduled broadcast. Gunnar Henderson, same team, and they have had problems getting this news properly portrayed as well. It was a minor side issue. And this happened like it was Wednesday or Thursday last week. They said they're going to give him the weekend off and he'll start ramping up on Monday. Well, it's Thursday as we record right now. And it's gotten so bad, they're saying he may miss the start of the season. They're very optimistic he won't. But it's basically come down to the wires, what it sounds like, when they're talking about it. Where are you at on this one? Because this is one, it's an intercostal strain, essentially. Similar to what Jake Berger and others had last year. So where are you sitting on Gunnar Henderson?
My initial lean was to buy the dip in his ADP because I'm a big fan of Gunnar. I think I'm kind of ahead of the market anyway with how I have him ranked. I think he's my fourth or fifth ranked player overall. I love his profile. I'm glad you took him. I mean, well, before when he was perceivably healthy, I was a big fan of your pick when you got him seventh or eighth in that one draft. But yeah, well, I guess the one question, I thought I heard that he didn't hurt it swinging. Is that right? Wasn't it like a fielding issue or something?
It was kind of a combo. He had like one at bat, and then he jumped for a ball, and then he left. So it feels like it's a little bit of everything, but I think the final straw was fielding, yes.
All right, so with that known, I guess it's positive because if he goes to swing, it's a motion that didn't aggravate it in the first place. So hopefully that, like, whether he stretched out, like, extended to catch a fly ball or like, the line drive, whatever, that gives me hope that he can still swing he can swing somewhat and it won't affect the original injury how it happened. If you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
But I mean, like I said, I have a week till my first draft roughly. And I mean, it really comes down to Kadeus as well. But if he drops to the end of the first round or out of the first round, then he'll be an option regardless of what really happens with my Kadeus placement. So yeah, if he misses a week to start the season, he could be a huge value by if he returns healthy in that time frame. But I think it's just a little early to say for sure right now. We need to wait for more information on the timeline before I can really make a decision one way or the other.
Yeah, I got my first share, like you mentioned, of Gunnar and TGFBI. I was like, okay, we'll give it a shot here at pick 7 in that draft. Over the last 10 OCs, all OCs drafted in the month of March right now, Gunnar Henderson's ADP is about 8. He's gone from 6 to 10. Those are drafts that took place yesterday when we knew the news. So people are still taking him in the first round until we probably hear otherwise. I'm with you. It's if you liked Gunnar, I wouldn't let this sway you a ton just yet. Let's wait and get a little more out of that situation for sure. Great point by Paul here in the chat, circling back to Grayson. Ronzi Contreras is also an option. He's looking really good this spring. So if they really want to keep Povich down for whatever reason, Ronzi could be a guy that can sneak in there as well.
Is he back to starting though? I thought the Angels started converting him to a reliever.
And then the Orioles?
Well, The Angels had him last year as a reliever, I believe. And then, because I thought he may be a closer for them potentially before Joyce got it.
The Angels did. The Orioles want to stretch him out. That's
Jesus. It could get ugly.
Like they say, they're building him up as potential rotation depth in camp. That was late February with Ronzi. So we'll see.
Yeah, for a team that I thought had too many starters, they're getting kind of short because they have four guys on the IL, maybe five now with Grayson. And
or stop me. Is that Dylan Cease's noise music getting traded?
Yeah, that's. I think Spencer Goodwine suggested Cease instead, which I would love. No, it was a few months ago. Yeah, I mean they should trade for someone, I think, but I don't know. Yeah, we'll see what happens. It makes too much sense for them to not do that.
Yeah, when I had MLB Dream on my Orioles preview, he mentioned like they need a starter so bad. That's still when they had Grayson, by the way. They needed one bad, as Spencer said, Heston Kjerstad. That was what Dream said. Kjerstad and a couple guys, whatever it takes, because we're not going to play these guys in the bigs. We need pitching. Like, make it happen. Like, do it. So, yeah, definitely. Could the next 24 to 40 hours could get really interesting in Baltimore as they want to stay contending, hopefully. Adelis Garcia, some good news here on the injury front. He got scratched the other day, had an MRI on an oblique injury. MRI came back mild strain. They expect him back here any day. The funny part was they said it seems better than the Wyatt Langford injury because he was supposed to be day to day. And then, like, the next quote from Bochy was Langford's going to play Friday. So I don't think Garcia's playing Friday. I think they're talking about the depth of recovery time. So I think we dodged a bullet for Adelis right now.
I hope so because I got him late in one draft. That's the only spot I really got him so far. But if Adelis stays healthy throughout the rest of the spring, I think he's a pretty good target, especially if you have a batting average cushion. Because I think the power could still be there. The run and RBI production should be there. Steals are a little bit of a question mark. Maybe if he gets 10, that'd probably be like the ideal target for projections. But yeah, I think he's a good candidate for a bounce back. He's worked on retooling his swing a lot. So I think if Adelis is there in the mid rounds, I think he's a great target if you need some power.
Yep, I completely agree with that. Christian Walker was scratched from Wednesday's game with an oblique injury as well. The MRI came back relatively clean. He said on Thursday he has similar discomfort as the day before, which is better than the oblique injury he had in 2024, which apparently got worse for a while as things kept developing. So Walker isn't overly concerned at the moment. Obviously, you never know with any of these injuries. See where it goes. But how are you feeling on Christian Walker right now?
I think I'm all right. So we have 3 weeks to opening day, which is actually pretty awesome to say. And so there's definitely time even for all these guys to heal up. So, I mean, it's not like we have a week left till the real games start. But it is concerning that it's the same thing as he had last year, Walker. But hopefully he knows how to manage it. And they caught it early enough where it's not going to be a big issue. But I guess we have to wait for more timeline information, I suppose, like with the other guys.
Yeah, that's the problem with a lot of these injuries. It's spring, so any minor anything, you're like, okay, get out. We're good. We don't need to mess with it, which is smart. But it leaves a lot of fans and fantasy people going, well, what is it? What is it? What are we doing? And you just got to kind of sit back and wait. Last but not least, one we don't have to sit back and wait on is Luis Eel of your New York Yankees, who is out with a major lat strain, and it's official he'll be out for at least 3 months because he's going to basically be shut down for 6 weeks and have to rebuild from there. I'll let you have the floor here. You've probably heard a lot of things living where you are on this situation.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, well, one, as a Yankee fan, of course, but two, because I wasn't targeting Heel. So this is someone that my opponents can now not draft when I don't want anything to do with them because of the walk rate primarily. I mean, in terms of real life production, he could like, he's good enough to just be like a good starter for your team, but the walk rate's scary. The fly ball rate is scary for him. And I guess really the biggest question is the replacement is probably going to be Stroman, who I want nothing to do with even in 15s. I think he really collapsed last year. He's almost 34, doesn't strike guys out, doesn't even have a good, like the best walk rate anymore. So he's just so prone to getting crushed. I was watching his one start the other day and Stroman gave up a meatball to Austin Riley. It was like right down the middle. I think we're talking about in the Discord. I wish I saw the speed because it couldn't have been more than 89. It didn't sink at all. Like normally he has a sinker. That's why he gets all the ground balls. But that's kind of going away for Stroman, I believe. He's not really as – let me check out his ground ball rate. Yeah, it dipped 8 percentage points from 2023 to 2024. Still good at 49% last year for Stroman, but like at one point he was in the 60s when he first came up with the Blue Jays. So he's definitely – for whatever reason, he's not getting the same batted ball luck. And yeah, with a swing or a K percentage that's, I think it's like in the teens.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, it's, yeah, even in 15, maybe in AL only is like the only spot I would even mess with him. But I mean, the main events in those leagues, they kind of creep into that depth as it is. But yeah, with that money on the line, I am not touching Stroman.
My bigger question is, when does Will Warren enter the conversation for you?
May 1st, after Stroman has a 6 ERA in April.
There you go. Okay, so probably not a draft guy, but someone to potentially look at. Or you could, yeah, May 1st, it's a month stash, maybe. Maybe in a deep league.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with stashing it, well, if you have the IL spot, or if you have a league with ILs, I guess it makes sense to maybe have a stash, because if someone gets hurt, then you can just put them on your IL instead of keeping them on your bench. But like in NFBC, you're going to get so many injuries to start the season, and then you're already stashing Warren potentially. So then you have to cut him. And then what's the point of even drafting him at that point? But if your league allows it, I think he's definitely a good stash.
Yep, for sure. I'm with you there. All right, let's get into it. Let's have some fun with this. We enjoyed it last time. We've done this in years past. It's one of those we joked about, like, hey, we could do this like all night talking about different players here. Ben has, and we've talked about these sheets previously with Ben on the show, is he puts together these awesome sheets that we use to analyze players and then with projections and how they rank out, so on and so forth. And then he can tweak them with comparing to other projection sites. That's where I'm going to stop. I'm going to let him explain it the right way. But let everybody know, like, what we're looking at, you and me are looking at here as we analyze these players, to let people know, like, hey, when, because so many people use projections to draft now. So this is why it's a good, I think, open conversation to be like, well, you might like Steamer because blah, blah, blah. But over here at this projection, things are a little different. So what do you got for us for what we're looking at?
Yeah, so we have it's a pivot table that summarizes each hitter's, we're just talking about hitters again, hitter's projection. So we're looking at the hitters, each hitter's average projection, and they're ranked by the average of their rank for Steamer, ATC, and the Bad X. And this is using my Z-scores. That's how I like to do a player evaluation with the projections. Last time I noted the differences amongst the projection systems. So when I do the Z-scores, I look at players with 300 plus at-bats, and then you get the average, like homers, for example, and the standard deviation for the homers. And last week, we mentioned that Steamer had the highest projections on average for their hitters with 300 plus at-bats projected. I think the next best was ATC in terms of the average totals, and then the Bad X was the least optimistic with their hitter averages, which makes sense because ATC is a aggregate projection system, so they should be in the middle, and by chance we pick two that they are in the middle of. But I think it's okay to reference ATC still, because as we looked at last time, there's sometimes ATC is highest or lowest on a player, they're not always in the middle. So I think there's still value to looking at it, because I mean, in the end, a player's projection is going to be wrong, because it's going to be impossible to accurately project every all five stats, runs, homers, RBI, steals, average for a player. But like we say all the time, when you're looking at your team as an aggregate, they should be relatively accurate with how your team's structured, the balance between power, speed. Do you have enough leadoff hitters? Do you have enough run, enough power, all those things? So one of the features that we have here is that we can just look at a player, we see the average, and then we hit a button and it shows each projections that's going into that average. And then it also has the rank. And we're going to be picking out players based on the highest average standard deviation. So when we average the hitter ranks for ATC, Bad X, Steamer, there's an average, of course, and then there's a standard deviation amongst those three systems. And the higher the standard deviation, the more the systems differ on each player. And as we saw last week, I think it was Willy Adames, the projections were relatively similar across all three, but because of how the different systems project the player pool, Adames, I think he may have moved down in one, even though the line was almost identical across the three. So we may have run into that again. Usually it's like with the Bad X being low on hitting. So some players may get a boost or they may come down, but we'll see as we go along.
Yeah, no, that was a big takeaway for me, is even though the projections are similar, that because of the way they project other players, that thus the rankings shift, that made a different score. So it was another standout point to, you might just use one projection site, and that's fine, but these are why things can vary from site to site. So we go back a few episodes, there's actually 12 episodes of this show, to go and to be fair, I had a bunch of team stuff in there. So to do our first set of projections, kind of higher tiered players potentially is the way I'll put it. So we have more variance as we go down here because they're players with a lot of volatility to their game, which makes the projections interesting. And we'll kick it off with a player that I know I've talked about a lot. I've seen a lot of other people talk about him as well, and that's Christopher Morel. There's a lot of, you know, almost blind optimism because if you look at just stat lines, there's plenty of valid questions and comments to be made about it. But then it's also like in my brain projection stuff. And then you look at the projection sites, Ben, and he has a 30, almost 33% rank in this. So shows a lot of differences between the two sites. But they all project him to hit over 20 home runs. That's a plus. Other than that, though, there is definitely some wiggle room here, it feels like. So what do you see when you look at these three projections for Christopher Morel?
Well, the Bad X is a big fan because ATC has him as 145th hitter, Steamer the 160th, and this is also without any positional adjustments. So catchers are just being thrown in with the rest of the player pool. I don't think we have a couple of catchers, but we'll get to that eventually. And then the Bad X has him at 97, so they have him as a top 100 hitter. And he kind of falls
into that. Real quick. What was that? Let me cut you just real quick. Yeah, it makes sense that the Bad X, if anybody has him high, because of his Statcast numbers.
Yes.
That would be, just want to give that to the listeners. Like that's a big difference from other projection sites with the Bad X. So a player Morel's standards, like with a guy that's usually 10% last year to almost 15%+ barrel rates, you're talking 50% hard hit rates, that might stand out for a Derek Cardi and company. But sorry, as you were.
Yep, perfectly fine. Yeah, that's a good point to make. And looking at his stat cast, Morel, I mean, the standout is really the bat speed. It's 95th percentile. That's fielding. I mean, the sprint speed is only 49th percentile, which is fair. Like, he's still fast, but it's the barrel rate's above average, 69th percentile. And he's kind of like the Adames example, where the projections don't differ a whole lot across the three systems. But I think because the Bad X has offense suppressed the most, and it's also the highest projection system for him, that's why there's such a huge gap, almost 50 to 70 positions in terms of the hitter rankings for Morel. So they have him for the most steals, Bad X, 11 to 9 for the other two. And I'm really starting to grow on Morel, mainly because of the playing time situation. He should be a full-timer as long as he produces. And the ballpark situation, Jordan Steinbrenner is just like Yankee Stadium, as everyone hopefully knows by now. So it's short down the lines, and it's going to be short for most of right field. So I don't know how he is with going the other way, Morel, but if he can go the other way a little bit more frequently, he could get a lot of cheapy homers. I'll admit it. But yeah, it's just, I think he's a solid upside play. The average could really kill you. He's projected to be a negative contributor in all three systems. But I mean, that's to be expected. I think he hit like 197 last year. But I think he definitely has some nice upside where he's going.
Yeah, 197, had one total home run with the Tampa Bay Rays, which was one of his first games with them too, which was crazy. Another thing I want to point out, though, looking at these projections, that's why I like the drop-down. It's got all three sitting right there. Yes, the bat's very favorable to him, but the Steamer projection has him going for 34 fewer at-bats, which might make him creep up closer to the bat's numbers, which is another thing to maybe come into play on. So Steamer might like him a lot more than letting on based on just the total at-bats there. Again, it's only 34 at-bats. So, you know, I still think with Morel, they could probably say two more home runs maybe, give or take him there, which puts him closer to where he's at too.
But also too, with when we did the projection review in October or November, whatever it was, I think the main takeaway was that projections usually miss on the playing time. Because I think a lot of the guys, because there were a lot of misses, but when you look at the at-bat comparison, I mean, you're going to have guys get close to 700 plate appearances, and projections will never project that unless it's like Marcus Semien. So a lot of the time, if you can nail the playing time with players and then go from there, I think it's one good way to beat the projections.
Most definitely. Let's check out J.J. Bleda of the Sacramento Athletics, a player that was very valuable last year, especially in deeper formats, just a steady guy with good production. We saw Bleda, and people are optimistic moving to Sacramento, could help Bleda even more. Last year hit 20 home runs while hitting 243, 60 RBI, 74 run score, doesn't run much at all. Look at the projection sites, though. We have a difference of 13 points based on the grading system here. And I know he platoons a little bit, but not that much is the weird part. Like last year, we saw 642 plate appearances. I kind of differ with the projections there. But what do you see with J.J. Blidé?
Well, I see a pretty good value where he goes. I'm a big fan of a lot of the A's hitters, especially the ones that are going later. So, I mean, primarily it'd be Blidé and Tyler Soderstrom, which I don't know if we're going to talk about Soderstrom, but he's definitely a target of mine this year. Looking at the three systems, though, Blidé is getting the most love from Steamer, which makes sense because Steamer on average is the most offensively optimistic projection that I'm looking at here. They have him for almost 80 and 80 with 24 homers. That's a huge line. Even with a poor average, I would take that at his draft cost. And even though it stands out a lot, Steamer from ATC and the Bad X, it's only like 20 spots at the most ahead of ATC's rank for him. So Blidé is the 120th hitter per Steamer. Bad X is 133. So in this case, Bad X is in the middle. And ATC is actually the lowest at 146. So there must be some other systems out there that aren't a big fan of Blidé. And maybe they're not adjusting for the new park, because if anything, it should be a better environment for him once the A's go to Sacramento this year. And because even if it's not a plus hitter's park, they're going from a pretty big negative to at least neutral. And that'll just give them a boost in general. So, and Blidé will play every day. He should mostly. I mean, he's a lefty, so maybe he gets an occasional day off versus a tough lefty. But he's projected to hit third for them. And if you can get someone hitting third for a decent offense at this point in the draft, I am all up for that. So, but like with Morel, he's got to make sure your offense or your average can take the projected average hit that Blidé would provide. But other than that, he could give you a couple of steals. He projected on average projected for five. So I'll take that where he's going.
Yeah, no, I like him quite a bit. I think there's a lot to like, and it's a combination of playing time for me, better ballpark. Like you said, I don't think the projections can properly give its due to J.J. Blidé. And just looking at ATC and Ariel's usually really good with playing time, so he's probably got a valid reason here. This isn't picking at anybody's stuff. I just don't see the 50 plate appearance differences from ATC in the bat versus Steamer for a guy that went over 600 last year. Very, very surprising to me. All right. Next up on the docket here is Nathaniel Lowe of the now Washington Nationals. Lowe is a guy that has a lot of variance, like almost a short 22 on this between projections. It's a guy we know doesn't run much, but if you want to get aggressive here, could run more with Washington. Like we've talked about that before. Just a steady Eddie type guy, but a lot of differences here, and it seems like Steamer likes him the most, but again, they project him for more at-bats. So what do you see when you look at Nathaniel Lowe?
I think his Statcast is really hurting him with the bad X, so they're the lowest on Lowe. They have him as hitter 164, whereas actually ATC and Steamer are almost dead on. They have him at 126 and 127. So basically the same rank position for Nathaniel. And really it comes down to the homers. So Steamer has him for 18. The Bad X has him for 12, and with low, he's a pretty low average launch angle because he has a lot of ground balls, not the best barrel rate. He really only had that one year where he had 27 homers a few years ago, and I think he just got kind of lucky. But he's great for RBIs and runs, so I think the 67 projected average across the three systems is kind of low. I would think he'd probably be better for 75-75 if he's going to hit fourth or fifth for the Nationals because they have a pretty solid lineup. It's not that bad. And yeah, if he could chip in, maybe, I don't know if he could get to Nolan Shanwell's 10, but if he could get to like 8, that's pretty valuable from a first baseman or a corner when you're not really expecting to get any steals from those positions. And I think he could really, so the average, we don't have the actual average value here, but it's shown in the weighted average that I use. And it's pretty low. It's almost league average. I think he could be a higher contributor in average than what the projections are suggesting for low. So yeah, it's just the bad X is low because of his stat cast. And I think there's definitely some room for upside here. So I'm a fan of low as a corner if you don't need the power.
Yeah. 100%. Like he should get you 15 plus home runs. I think he's for good average. He's in the middle of the order of a lineup that we love that should score a ton of runs. And I think he's going to run a lot compared to what we've seen. And right now, like in DC's 280 ADP, like that's very, very attractive if you miss on first base or you want to play a corner infielder. I think there's a ton to like there. Maybe he's better for 15s. I get it because the ceiling isn't really high with 12s. But as a corner infield, if you want to play the game, at least stream him. Like there's definitely opportunities for Nathaniel Lowe. Let's talk about big Tyler O'Neill here, a guy that's already polarizing enough because we know if he plays over 100 games, he's going to hit you 30-plus home runs. Big if when it comes to big Tyler. Obviously, the StatCast metrics will jump off the page in a tremendous way. A lot of differences in projections here. ATC and the bat actually are rather similar on him, but maybe that's just a overall rankings situation there. Steamer, not the biggest Tyler O'Neill fan in the books. What do you see when you look at Tyler O'Neill? Because, like I said, we already know the risk with Tyler O'Neill, but it looks like the projections are even baking that in with one O'Neill who has an ADP of 181 these days.
Oh, wow. So that's OC ADP is 181.
Yeah, that's since March 1st. There's been 10 drafts. Yep.
Well, that makes sense because his upside's so high.
And you can replace him in an OC.
Right. You're getting better replacements if you do
that. And you'd imagine if you draft O'Neill in your draft, you're probably taking your sixth outfielder a little earlier than normal, potentially.
Yeah.
So be an option as well.
Yeah. And the big thing that stands out, so the aggregate average at bats for O'Neill amongst the three is 414, which is not a lot at all. That's like a part-time player. But then at the same time, I pulled up his career stats and he's only hit 130 games as his career high. And last year was his second most at 113. So you gotta respect that the projections can't project him for more than that. But like we're kind of alluding to, on a per plate appearance basis, O'Neill's numbers are going to be really good. So say he makes it to 600 at bats in a perfect world. You're looking at 90, 30, 90, and maybe 9 steals. You kind of just take half of what he's got there and add it to everything. That's a massive. That's basically what he did when he broke out in that year. He had 138 games in 2021 when he went 34, 15, 89 runs, 80 RBIs. But the thing with O'Neill is the average, but he hits it so hard, the ball, that he can kind of make up for a little bit. But he had a 33.6% K rate last year, which is not very good at all. So he's kind of like Morel with his boom or bust potential. I think there's less bust with O'Neill. I think he'll still produce when he's on the field, but I mean, they're moving the walls in Baltimore. It'll, not that he was here last year, but it'll definitely help him, O'Neill, going forward into the season. So I haven't been able to draft him yet because of the injury risk. And especially if he goes in the top 200, I'll probably end up passing on O'Neill unless I'm really desperate for power, which hopefully I'm not at that point in the draft. But if you think you can handle that risk, I get taking him. It's just that ADP is creeping up a little high for me.
Yeah, it's creeping up. The risk is definitely there. I don't have any shares yet. Maybe it's because my strategy, kind of like with you, is I usually feel okay in power. I'm not like reaching for it at that point in time. And I'm also very risk averse. Like, I'll take my chances later, but it's usually more with like, can this young player take another step forward type thing, besides the guy that's always hurt scenario, which maybe is the wrong approach, but that's kind of one of the angles I go with as well when it comes to Tyler O'Neill, because you nailed it. The biggest thing I've even wrote, he was in basically a high risk, high reward article on Fantasy Pros that should be out or out any day, that I wrote that I wrote down that the playing time, 130 games basically is his max. He's done it over 100 twice in his career, and not a ringing endorsement to trust those type of things. Dr. Dave would say no on that.
Yes.
All right, Alec Burleson. This is kind of a two-pronged approach here. Like, I wanted to talk about players that have some differences in their rankings, but also a player that may have some differences just based on playing time this season as things continue to shake out in St. Louis. Burleson, as many would call him, had 21 homers, 9 steals at .269 over 152 games last year. The year before, he played 107 games. Projection sites have him playing 110 to 118 games. So obviously that's a massive drop from 2024. When you look at the projections, Ben, we're seeing, you know, I would say rather similar stuff when it comes to the overall stat line on these rankings, but they definitely rank very different in each type of projection here. So when you look at Burleson, what do you think of the projections? And then for me, it seems like it's baking in the chance that he does not play regularly, which is starting to be discussed with St. Louis, as they're not playing him in the outfield in the spring. He seems like he's either going to DH or play first, which we have Wilson there. Playing time is getting harder to come by for Burleson right now.
It is. And, yeah, so to the point about not playing full-time, So at the end of the year, I mentioned this a couple times, I think, in passing on the show, but I looked at actual platooning last year, and Burleson actually fell within a full-time player. So based on the number of right-handed or play appearances versus right-handed hitters, Burleson was like 76% of the time, which is kind of getting high, but it's well within the range that I established of a full-time player, because he had 142 play appearances versus lefties. So it's basically a third of a quarter of his at-bats were versus lefties, which is a pretty good amount, especially for a lefty. And but the problem is he had a 516 OPS versus lefties. So that's not going to give the Cardinals any incentive to keep him out there all the time. And Burleson doesn't have the best barrel or underlying metrics like when it comes to power. He's mainly a contact guy with some pop, and I don't think he's fast either. So the steals he got last year seemed kind of lucky. And for those reasons, I've kind of been out on Burleson. He's only projected for like 30 more at-bats than Tyler O'Neill was, 441 amongst the three systems. And he's like, his ranking has him with guys like Young, Ortiz, Langoliers. Well, catcher doesn't matter. Norby, Morel.
Those words, easy. I was kidding.
Yeah. So he's kind of, his ADP was kind of like high 200s, I think, at one point. I don't know what it is now. I don't have the OC pulled up, but
I got it right here. It's closing in on 240 right now.
Yes. I think he needs to be in the back half of the 200s based on the projections. And I'm pretty sure I'm guilty of having him higher in my overall rankings, but I just pass over his name every time because he could hit high up and when he's in the lineup, like he could hit second or third for the Cardinals, Burleson, but I don't know if he's going to be a platoon bat. I want him to stand out in at least power or speed, and he doesn't in either. So yeah. And of course the bad X is lowest on him because of the Statcast data, which isn't surprising. So yeah, it's he's kind of a fade for me, and
Yep, I don't have any shares either. I loved them last year. The playing time concerns really get me. And if things change, awesome. You have a great player on your hands, but right now it's not changing, which makes it very, very difficult. So, yeah, I'm out. That's why I wanted to bring him up, because first off, the projections in general, but the projections kind of do hint at a part-time player, which should be noted more for those that are pumping him up. A guy that might not be a part-time player, folks, wink, wink. He's projected to lead off because he leads off every day in the spring training, 6-for-6 so far this season. That's Matt Wallner, not Joey Gallo. Matt Wallner, for those keeping track at home. Wallner hit .259 last year at 13 home runs over 75 games. Projections have him playing about 120 games, I guess, somewhere in that window with a lot of power, of course. When you look at the projection systems, Ben, the bat surprisingly has him ranked the lowest out of the three. Could be a system of the projections, as we've said before. Steamer has him with the most at bats, which stood out to me. They all have him hitting about the same power. But I expected the bat to be higher, honestly, based on the stat cast metrics that Matt Wallner does have. So what are you seeing when you look at the Matt Wallner situation here?
It could just be the strikeout rate with the bad X, because that is part of Statcast is,
it's true,
I guess, sliders, you know. But he's actually ranked lower than Burleson is, Wallner, at least in this list right here. Not by much, but Burleson is ahead of Wallner, probably because of the average. I think the average brings down Wallner a lot. He's
getting drafted before him, too.
Oh, yeah, I would take Wallner over Burleson. I mean, I don't have him ranked that way, I don't think. But it doesn't mean I won't. It's not like my rankings are like a strict thing when I do it anyway. When I say that, it's like, it's just how I order players, and it gives me ideas for when I want to take them in drafts. But it's not like my Bible by any means. But yeah. So my comparison to Wallner has been recently is Toglia, because when you look at their underlying numbers, they're almost identical, like with the barrel rate, the K rate, the other X stats. I think the fly ball, ground ball is a little bit different from them, but like the chase rate's the same, the contact's the same, which, and they're not all the best. That's some of the issues with Toglia, and also he has Coors as a crutch for his production. But at least Wallner has leadoff to his name right now, and that can really make up for a lot of deficiencies. I mean, it could crush your average even more if he does hit like .220 or something like that and goes full Gallo on us, like Ryan likes to say. But I mean, the percentiles would be off the charts for his barrel rate, hard hit, if he qualified last year, Wallner. And I mean, he did hit .259, but that's because he hit the ball so damn hard. He had like a .234 XBA, which if he can approach 30 homers, Wallner, it's not going to kill you. I mean, you would like it a little bit higher, of course, but and he's got some speed, 55th percentile, so maybe he chips in six steals or something like that along the way. Projections don't really have him for that many. Well, the team has him for five, so I wasn't crazy saying that. But yeah, once I saw that Wallner has been hitting leadoff, I got a lot more interested in him. So he did kind of face lefties a little bit last year at the end. On the season, though, he definitely was in that platoon range for the ratio I was mentioning earlier with Burleson. And Roster Resource does have Wallner in a platoon still. I guess it would be with Miranda, and then that means Willie Casho would shift to the outfield if Wallner was to sit versus a lefty, because Bader would probably platoon with Larnach. So I think there's a chance that Wallner does get some at-bats versus lefties, and I think like he's not like Burleson where he's awful. I think he does have some okay splits versus them. So I really like Wallner. I haven't taken him yet, but he's definitely someone who I could see rising. So I don't know if I'd chase that new price, but if I need power for sure, I'd be targeting him in drafts.
Yep. Obviously I've professed my love for Matt Wallner quite a bit. The fact he was facing lefty towards the end of last year was very nice. The Twins do have a lot of annoying potential platoon situations. There's no avoiding that when it comes to them. But Wallner feels like he should stand out above the rest. The only thing I will say with Wallner, if I have to throw some cold water on my love for him, is he is a guy that has the profile that could probably get streaky. So if it does get cold, then things are subject to change. But as a whole, I'm very much there. And Spencer in the chat says Rocco loves his platoons. He does. It's annoying as all get up. It is just horrific for fantasy. But in real life, it keeps the Twins in the race every single season.
So probably a better roto guy instead of head-to-head, yes, for the streaky.
100% a better roto guy. Head-to-head, great call. Great call on that one. All right, let's talk about JTR. I know we usually don't talk catchers on this because projection systems will vary a ton, and especially when it comes to the rankings of them because they're catchers and all these different things. But and you can elaborate on that for those that might not remember why we talked about that the first time around. But JTR stands out a bunch. Like, he's got a massive difference here. And we're going to talk about, I think I have one other catcher on here later just to kind of discuss as well. But I want to bring up JTR because this used to be a top like three catcher time and time again. Now he's barely a top 10 catcher for some. When things change, they've already talked about giving JTR more rest, trying to get him at first base and other spots this year for his knees. But projections do have him hitting 16 home runs, which is good. They do have him stealing some bags again, especially the Bad X has him stealing 10 bags, which is a plus. But they have him playing 400 to 435 at bats. So definitely a step down from years previous from JTR. When you're looking at these projections, again, you can emphasize the catcher situation, but what do you see with JTR here that might stand out to you, I guess?
Well, so he's one of the ones that's driven by similar projections across all three, but it's the Bad X being much higher on him than other players, which is actually kind of surprising, yes, that he would stand out in the Bad X. But I will say, when I did my research early in the winter, I was surprised at how good the underlying numbers looked for JTR last year. I didn't have him at all. He has a pretty good amount of red on his Statcast page. The one thing that really stands out that isn't is his average X velocity was 52nd percentile, which isn't terrible, though. I mean, especially for a catcher. But he had a well above average XBA, X slug. Barrel was 71st percentile for him. Hard hit was 8th percentile. But the thing is, he's a catcher, and I'm worried about the knees. I think it was a knee injury that hurt him last year, and he still has 79th percentile sprint speed, but how much will the Phillies want him to run now that he's 33? He'll probably turn 34 this year, if I had a guess. So I've been hesitant to draft JTR. I do have him ranked kind of in the Stevenson range. Well, I mean, that's where he's going to, but I have him in that whole mid-range catcher grouping. And I mean, I would take him if he fell to me and was the last one available of that tier, I guess I'll call it. But I mean, the Phillies lineup could be changing a lot because they might have Schwarber playing, yep, the outfield or first or whatever the crazy things are talking about. I don't know who would DH in that chance. Hopefully Realmuto would, but you can't really project him to be a full-time catcher like Adley or William is anymore, or Yiner. He's going to be relatively like two-thirds of the time, I would think. And that's kind of what the projection average at bat average is for him. It's 418 at bats, which is fine for a catcher. It's just that, do you trust the health? And that's really the one thing that's been holding me back from taking JTR so far, is just will he even run anymore? And then at that point, he's just like, 16 homers is kind of like Keibert Ruiz, because, and even the average isn't projected to be that good for Real Muto. He is barely above average with the contribution, the projections think he'll provide for you. It's, so if you can bank on the speed, it makes sense, but I don't know. He's a tough one to nail down. And like I said, if he falls and I need a catcher, then okay, I'll take him, but I'm not going to target him still.
Yep. It just stood out quite a bit. The things have shifted and the projections are shifting with him. So that stood out to me as well. Let's talk Colt Keith, a guy that's going to be the new first baseman for Detroit, it sounds like, moving off of second base with Gleyber Torres in town in Detroit. Colt Keith, some people really, really like him, like I do. Some people think it's a platoon, it's a mess, there's a lot of questions to be had there. Colt Keith hit 13 home runs last year in 148 games with the Tigers. The year before, had 27 home runs in the minor league. So a pretty good first season in the bigs for Colt Keith. But if you look under the hood with one Colt Keith, there is a lot of no differences, I guess, scoring-wise with the three projections. The Bad X does not like his stat cast. I pretty much can guarantee you that. That's what I've seen in the past with him. But when you're staring at this, we got similar production, same speed numbers. It comes down to power, it feels like, between the three. And it has him kind of on the strong side of a platoon, if that's what we're going to go with as well. So what do you see when you look at Colt Keith?
Yeah, this is one where you're definitely much higher on him than I am. I think he was one of our first base debates. I believe he's projected to be in the platoon, or he's not projected to be in the platoon on roster resource. But based on his usage last year, he was above the threshold where he kind of was a platoon hitter. He had 84% of his at-bats or plate appearances versus right-handed hitters. So that tells me that they kind of did platoon him last year, and we know the Tigers love their platoons. Look at Zach McKinstry getting plate appearances, and like Badu was platooned a ton, and there's countless guys. Jace Young could be platooned as well. I mean, at some point, though, you can't platoon everybody. So maybe Keith is the one that's saved because of the other guys aren't as good as him. But yeah, you kind of mentioned that why I'm hesitant to draft Keith too high is because the stat cast is pretty poor. He's not going to run a lot, but he could, though. He had 7 steals last year, 61st percentile. There are slower guys who steal more, so I guess it is possible if he is a good base runner. I'm not sure how good a base runner he is. But yeah, like he will gain first base eligibility, Keith. But as a middle infielder, I want someone who would probably run more. So that's kind of why I've been hesitant to take him so far. And so I kind of lean with the Bad X's optimism, or I guess pessimism in this case, that he's okay. I mean, at least the playing time is pretty similar for all three systems, around 480, which is a good amount. That's kind of on the high side compared to the other players we talked about. So like I said, I think he'll be a full-time player. But I just don't know if Keith, I don't know if it's going to be a worthwhile accumulation of stats for that playing time, if that makes sense.
No, I'm with you, because like, I was very, very optimistic on him coming into the season. Then a couple signings and question marks come into play. Like, I still like him. I definitely have not been able to get him in a 12. It just does not work for me in a 12. Maybe in a 15 I could see, because it'll be first base, second base. He gets some MICI. Like, I could see the appeal there. At that point in time, it's still a little tricky, all things said and done. Let's go to another Washington National first baseman. We talked Nathaniel Lowe already. Let's talk Josh Bell for a minute here, a guy that keeps changing teams, but year after year, he's had, if you don't count the COVID years, he's had 17 or more home runs in like 6 of the last 7 seasons. Dude hits for a respectable average. I'd say he's like a 250-ish guy. Doesn't run much at all, period, but puts up a good stat line for where he goes in drafts. He goes like at the end of drafts. And when you look at the projections here, it seems like you got Steamer has him playing the most. They have him hitting the most home runs. But ATC is not far behind. Power-wise, the bat takes a drop. How do you see the evaluation with the three projections that obviously the Steamer likes him the most out of the three?
Yeah, well, I think really that where he loses out the most is in his runs, because they almost range from for 10. Steamer has him for 66, and then the Bad X has Bell for 57. So it's 9. I guess if the Bad X is using sprint speed, that would make a lot of sense, because I don't think Josh Bell is extremely fast. But I would expect him to maybe have even a lower standard deviation. I mean, 15 isn't that bad for this point in the player pool, but I mean, they have him for a steal, all three, and a very neutral average. I think so because this is looking at players with 300 plus at bats, you're getting players that may not be starters all the time for our fantasy leagues. So you're looking more like an MLB average as a comparison. But I think so that's what, and that's what Bell's going to compare to when he has like a zero on average. He's basically league average, but I think he could be like a 250, 260 hitter. He's shown that in the past, but maybe the speed is going to bring that down. So that's why the projections aren't favoring his average all that much. But yeah, he's kind of like Nathaniel Lowe, maybe a little worse version, but I don't think this line really, if you want more power, then target Bell, because he's projected for a few more than Lowe. Lowe will have the average and definitely some steals. But yeah, I mean, they're going to be hitting back to back in the lineup. So I'm sure they'll help each other out along the way. And I think the 68 on average RBIs is very nice for this point in the draft, because I think Bell's going past pick 300, especially in an OC he would. So he's probably more of a streamer in 12s, but he's also a solid fallback in 15s for his corner. I mean, he went really late in DCs, I thought, for what his floor is. But
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your league format with Bell. And I think the runs should be a little bit higher than the Baddocks is giving him credit for, because he should play all the time if he's healthy. So I think 65 to 70 is more of a better projection for Bell versus the aggregate average of 61 that the three systems have.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think he's a much better player than given on. When you look at the ADP in March for the 10 OCs, he's been drafted in one of them with an ADP of 358. Wow. So waiver wire, which goes to show you 12s, like that's a solid waiver wire option if something goes wrong. At first base, like definitely a guy you can slide in relatively easily if you need to for a little while. And I 1,000% agree. In 15s, he just goes so late compared. Like in my auction, he was a reserve pick, which I guess you kind of expect in that regard. But DC's going super late. Like others, I like him, I guess, more than others, but I still don't understand the price. That's for sure. A player I've been getting a lot of shares of. And in 12s, it's because I think there's an upside play here. In 15s, it's a solid fifth outfielder with a ton of power. And again, I'm gambling on upside, I guess, when it comes to this. And that is Joe Adell. Joe Adell, one of the top prospects in baseball years ago. Obviously, that's petered out, but it seems like we've talked Joe Adell forever. The dude's turning 26 this year. He's still insanely young. We saw 20 homers and 15 steals in 130 games last season. Only hit 207, but the K rate dropped to 28%, which we had not seen in a couple of years. So still high, nonetheless. Not going to try to downplay that, but there were improvements in Joe Adell's game. Now Joe Adell is supposed to be, quote-unquote, the primary center fielder with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Again, could change with some moving pieces there. But a couple questions for you here, Ben. When we look at the projections, he's obviously projected to be a drudge to your batting average. That's fair. But a good power source, good speed source. Again, they have him almost for like 2015-ish, give or take. But they also have him for like a part-time platoon player, which it feels like he's going to get every opportunity to not be. So this is one of those where I wanted to bring it up is, yes, there's differences in the projections, but it's also one of those we could look at, and if we believe the playing time's off, we could project another number here, and that could change a lot of our thoughts on him. So just wanted to get your thoughts on Joe Adell for multiple reasons there, obviously.
Yeah, so I have three big negatives with Adell, but I do like him. So I'll start with the negative first. Lineup position, he's projected at eighth for the Angels, so fewer times through the lineup. He will obviously, the K rate or the average is like obvious. Everyone knows that with Adell. He had 207 last year. And then the third one is his platoon split. So I think we did a review and we mentioned Adell on it, and he crushes lefties, but he was pretty poor versus righties last year. So that could get him into the short side of a platoon. But when it cuts, so that's why I didn't draft him in DCs, because at his price, you kind of hope that he's going to be full-time guaranteed, but he makes a lot more sense in a fab league, especially in 12 teamers because of the upside. So now looking at the projections, this is one where the Baddocks is actually higher on Adell than the other two are, which is surprising. ATC has Adell as 156 hitter, Steamer 173, and the Baddocks has him at 140. And pretty similar projections down the line. Steamer's kind of low on runs. Baddocks has him for 60. The playing time varies a lot. So Steamer has him for only 394, which is a big reason why they're the lowest on him, I would say. And like I said a little while ago, playing time is the biggest reason why I think projections will be wrong. Yes. So with that said, on average, he has 414 at-bats amongst ATC Steamer. The bat projected at-bat set is 414. So quickly, I just prorated that to 550. He turns into a 75-run player, 28 homers, 78 RBIs, and 18 steals.
That's outstanding.
That's, I don't even know who would compare to that. And that's definitely a top 150 player when you're going 28, 18 with the bad average. So it's like, I guess, better Trevor Story, essentially. I don't know who else in that range would have an average that low with stats that high. So if Adele can play the whole year, I don't really think health's an issue for him. I don't remember him getting hurt at all. It's mostly been performance-based with why he hasn't had a full year yet. If he can just hit a little bit better versus righties and kind of do what Ozzie Albies does, he could be a monster. So I did take Adele as one of my outfielders in the Bubba and the Bloom auction. It was my first time drafting him this year. Of course, at the Fab League, like I said, I was a little scared off in DCs, but now that Main Events will be drafting, I'm sure he's going to get pushed up a lot. But with that power speed, the slate, I love Adele as a flyer, so I'm right there with you.
Yep. ADP is close to 300 in OCs right now. Like, I'm
way too low.
Salivating over that.
Like, you got to draft one after this, Bubba.
Well, I would stop it. Stop it. I would push him up. Like, I would take him around 270 just to make sure I got him. I think I still feel totally fine with that. Like, totally.
I'd even go higher just to make sure.
Yeah, make sure you leave with him. But the fact he's going that late is pretty telling, and he's gone in all 10 drafts at least. He's gone as high as 247, so people are on the same page as us. Given he's also gone as low as 329 to be in that league. My God, it's just drafts in general. We talk about auctions varying so much. It still happens in snake drafts too. Mm-hmm. Here's like, what in the world is going on here? All right, a couple more to talk about here. A handful more actually. We're still got some time to go here. Logan O'Hoppy. I said we had one more catcher. I just wanted to bring him up because there's some mega differences between the sites. Steamer, more importantly, it's a playing time thing. They have him for 401 at bats. The other two sites, 447, 449. And that factors in a massive difference here. So I just wanted to bring that up because a lot of people go to Steamer first on these things. Is that the biggest thing you see as a difference, or is there something else I am missing here?
No, you're right. And once again, like with JTR and Adele, BatX is the highest on him amongst the three, which is surprising. It's always weird when you see the BatX is the lowest in general, but it's higher on some players. Like I said at the beginning, everyone's different. But yeah, I have O'Hoppy ahead of JTR for what it's worth. I think O'Hoppy had like an injury thing that kind of messed with his swing. That's why his K rate spiked last year. I mean, I'm a little worried about Darno eating into his playing time, but I don't know why they would hinder O'Hoppy's development for Darno. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure someone will get hurt and then DH would open up for Darno, or maybe when Darno catches, O'Hoppy can DH and that keeps him in the lineup. So I'm a big fan of the upside, and I think he has pretty good Statcast metrics, O'Hoppy, so that's why the BatX would like him. But yeah, I'm fine with him as a player. He's not like my top target in that range of catcher like JTR was, but I am fine drafting him if I have to. I have taken him once so far, O'Hoppy, for what it's worth.
Yep. I have O'Hoppy ahead of JTR as well. He's like my top of my head. I just updated my catcher rankings on the Patreon. I'm going to work on getting the other ones done here in the coming days. I think I have him like six or something like that off the top of my head at catcher. So
oh, wow.
I'm very high on him, but I'm still high on him. Maybe it's a little lower, but I know he's top 10 for sure. I know that much. All right, let's talk about a guy that I absolutely love. Ryan does not, as we've mentioned in every live stream we can possibly do, and that is Garrett Mitchell. And Garrett Mitchell, we're looking at the projections here, has some differences for sure. The bat hasn't played 396 at-bats, 402 for ATC, Steamer 417. So that's my first gripe, because right now he's an everyday player, barring something crazy happening. Production maybe changes things. But on paper, like roster resource hasn't been in cleanup playing every day. Cleanup might – I'll give you wiggle room if you don't agree he's back in cleanup. That's fine. I just don't know who's playing over him. Defense is good. The stick is good. He's a big-time prospect at one point with them. Even with that, projections have him going 15, 19, 13, 20, 11, 20. So I think if you put him into a full season, we're getting closer to like 20, 25, 20, 30, even if you believe the way projections fluctuate here. So I'm just curious on what do you see in these projection differences that might skew this besides playing time, if there's anything. Like right now his ADP is 244, which I love. Like if you're short on outfielders, you could double tack Mitchell and Adele. You'd have two potential 2020 guys. That would be pretty darn sweet to me. Just throwing it
and,
out.
And you have a 220 average combined between the two of them.
You know me and ratios, Ben. We have issues. I have a love-hate relationship with them. But yes, this is something that I do have an issue with. That's why maybe OBP is the way for me. Let's just go that direction. Given
yeah, I'm not sure what Mitchell's OBP is.
Yeah, they're not that great there either. I'll just go stop that real quick.
Yeah, so I've always been hesitant with Mitchell because of the K rate. It's like over 30% for his career and parts of three seasons or whatever it is. So that's definitely an issue with him, but he does hit the ball really hard and he's pretty fast, as evident by these projections. So looking at this now more closely, so on average, they have him have Mitchell for 405 at bats between ACC Steamer and the Bad X, and that's 20 steals. So if he could get 500 plus, you're looking at mid to upper 20s in steals. And the Brewers like to run, and Mitchell has 95th percentile sprint speed. So he could, I don't know, in a perfect season, he could challenge 40 steals. I mean, it could be tough as a four hitter, but he has that potential in him. The Bad X keeps him down because of the 11 homers. And they're also lowest overall. He's the 188th hitter for them versus the other two having him in like the 160 range. But going back to the platoon now, last year he did have 83% of his at-bats versus righty. So he was a platoon player by that metric. But I pulled up the Brewers depth chart or the roster resource, and they don't have him in a platoon. And so you'd say, okay, well, he did last year kind of – he was kind of like Wallner, where Mitchell got some at-bats versus lefties or starts versus lefty starters, I think, late. And the reason is why I don't think he's projected there, and I kind of agree, is that they have so many lefties who would platoon before him. I don't know about Terang being a platoon lefty because his defense is so good, but the options on the bench are – Caleb Durbin, Mark Canha, who are both right-handed. I have no idea who Vinny Capra is. I don't know why he would play over anyone good. He's a righty. So I think, yeah, there's no way he would play over Terang. Maybe Dunn, but I think that Durbin would play over Dunn, or if Durbin just starts. But I think you were talking the other day about, I think it was maybe your breakfast with Bubba, that Durbin might get sent down or something, or you were talking with Curlin about it.
That's the latest rumor, which I think is insane, but that's the latest rumor, yes.
But outfield-wise, it's, I guess they have Durbin and Capra as outfield-infield, but Durbin's not an outfielder. So it would be kind of platooning with Frelick, which I completely see. And then, yeah so I think Mitchell is potentially safe right now. He may move down versus a lefty, but he's probably going to stay in the lineup. So I think that's why I'm more in on him now. And like with the other guys, actually a lot of these guys kind of in the theme. If you can handle the average that they may not bring to your team, I'm fine taking a shot on. I finally did draft Mitchell. I think in my last DC, I got him for the first time because I needed some power and speed upside. So, yeah, if he can approach 500 bats, he's going to pop a lot more than what the projections are saying right now. And like we said before, we're going back to it. If the playing time is different, then these guys can really hit versus what the projections are saying.
Yep. I'm with you on that one. Now you just got to talk some sense into Ryan on that, and he'll jump on board.
It is ugly. So I get where Ryan's coming from, but there is a lot to like.
You should have left it with, yes, I just drafted this piece of him. Yes.
My bad, Bubba. I'm not helping you.
This is Ben from Bubba, not Bubba in the Blue. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. All right. Let's talk Jacob Young, because this is one of those where it might just be my I hate rabbits situation for drafting is what comes down here. Because Jacob Young, there's no denying, like he's like a 255, 260 hitter. 30 plus steals, no power. Could score a ton of runs if he gets ninth on the wraparound with that lineup. So these are all very, very logistic conversations. He's going to be 25 this year. Like, he's still super young. Projections even have him hitting more home runs this year than he has in the past, which is an interesting. That's Jacob Wilson. I don't know. Never mind. Wrong. Jacob. That makes more sense at first. Like, how do they have him hitting more home runs? They still have him hitting four. That'd be a step up. I have 3, 5, and 2. His total is 4. But they have him stealing a ton of bags, as expected. Playing time maybe plays more than that. Where do you sit on Jacob Young? Because there is a lot of – this is one of those that really stands out of you different differences in projection sites, I should say. Almost at least three statistical categories.
Yeah, seeing a full-time player projected for 29 RBIs like the Bad X has, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's like Luis Castillo, second baseman bad, isn't it? Or like Juan Pierre bad. That's
– No, the Bad X has him for – yeah, 30 RBIs now. Holy crick, you're right.
Two homers, 29 RBIs.
Wow. I was like, oh my God. Yep, you're right. You're right.
That is tough. I mean, the Bad X has him 30 spots below on average than the other two do in terms of hitter rankings. So that's why he kind of stands out here.
Well, he only had 36 RBIs last year in 150 games.
So I pulled, I pulled up his stats to see if this is valid. And yeah, I'm like, that's kind of wild for 150 games and only 36 RBIs. That's, he almost had more steals than RBIs.
Jeez. That's not good. Not good.
Yeah. If you're really desperate for speed, then I get it. But this is like this is the Xavier Edwards argument where what are you going to get besides the steals? And I mean, I guess the average is okay, 256, so he won't hurt you at least, but it's going to be hard to build a balanced team if you have Jacob Young starting every week. So, yeah, I'm kind of with the Bad Axe, even though the other two aren't that optimistic either. But, yeah, with the Bad Axe seeing that 2-29, I'm like, yeah, I'll probably stay away if I hopefully can.
Yep, that's why I wanted to highlight that one, because there are some Jacob Young fans out there, and I get it. He's young. Things can change someday, but there hasn't been much shown to us that things are going to change. All right, this one's a little tongue-in-cheek, but it did actually check the boxes on this this sheet, because Carlos Santana's projections vary, is the best way I'll say it. Quite a bit, a high score of differences here. Steamer hasn't played in the most games. The Bad X, not a big fan. It feels like ATC's in the middle, as you'd expect with this. I'll just highlight for those that have been living under a rock and think Bubba's annoying by now, which fair, valid. Carlos Santana plays great defense and play almost every game. Carlos Santana has hit 19 or more home runs in, I say 18 or more home runs in every year since 2011 that wasn't a COVID season. That's the easiest way I can put it for you. Hits 230 to 240. He's productive. That's and he doesn't get drafted in 12s. So I'm going to throw it to you, Ben. Tell me I'm crazy, whatever you want. But in 15s, I think there's no reason that Carlos Santana should be ignored on this show. And Ryan Bloomfield is back and says, oh, what the F, Mitchell and now Carlos Santana again. Yep, yep. We're going to beat this one like a dead horse and make sure people understand how good these players are, Ryan. You can't just keep swatting them away. So Carlos Santana, Ben, if I'm wrong, feel free to let me know. But I will continue to draft him late in drafts.
It's surprising that Ryan doesn't like him because he had that geriatric team, which was it his tat one that was
labor.
Oh, the labor. Yeah. It was like average labor. Age of 35, labor, yeah. I think for all his players. It was
team AARP. Yes.
Oh man. Yeah. So it's probably the age cause he is 38. So I'm assuming that the Bad X, which is the lowest by a lot on Santana, is factoring that aging curve. But his stat cast isn't that bad. He's generally 50th percentile or better. A little below in all of his sliders. The worst one is launch angle sweet spot, but I doubt that's heavily influenced into the Bad X projections. So they have him for 15 homers, the Bad X Santana, 11 fewer runs than Steamer does, 13 fewer RBIs. And I think you mentioned that ATC is right in the middle. Mm-hmm. So Steamer has him as the 147th overall hitter. So, which is definitely draft worthy. And then the Bad X has him as a 221st, which when you factor in pitchers, probably means you shouldn't be taking him in OCs, but he's kind of in line with the Josh Bell, I think, ADP, at least he was in DC's Santana. And actually, after being kind of an average liability, he hit 230, I think, in 240 the last 2 years. So he's not going to kill you there. And if he just plays every day like he has, he's going to be a solid running RBI producer. I mean, he even averaged 5 steals the last 2 years, Santana, mm-hmm. which is kind of surprising. So I guess he's the better version of Josh Bell mm-hmm. when you look at it, but it's just the age is really the big question mark. So based on the projections, at least the Steamer projection, that's definitely the best one. But like we were saying before, they're the most optimistic when it comes to offense. I think he's fine. I wouldn't be targeting him in like your OCs that you're going to be drafting, but in the same vein as Bell, if you need a corner and a 15, I think Santana should be fine.
Great analysis, Ben. That was really, really good. Checks in the mail.
It was all honest too.
I know that was good stuff. I hope Ryan didn't leave the chat too soon on that one. If not, he can play it back. So I'll learn how to clip that one for him.
Yeah. Clip that one.
That's you nailed my reasons there. Like it's not flashy by any means, but in a corner infield in the 15, you can do a million times worse than what Carlos Santana brings to the table. And maybe Father Time finally catches up, but his defense is going to keep him in that lineup. So Kyle Manzardo must wait is what that comes down to. So
And you experienced this as well in the auction, I think, and I learned it in DCs, but once you get to like early 300s, first base dries up. It's like shortstop. It's like second behind shortstop. So shortstop's done in like the 200s. First base is done in the early 300s. So if you need a first baseman, like, well, you're debating Lamont Wade and Jonah Pride as your backup. Yeah. So you know what it's like.
Yep. It's brutal. Very brutal. So don't do it, folks. All right. A couple more here. Colton Cowser of the Baltimore Orioles, the Moo Man himself. Colton Cowser looked like a shoe-in to win the Rookie of the Year. Things disappeared quickly, but still finished hitting .242, 24 homers, 9 steals. Very solid season. Will be 25 this year. And we look at the projections. You have the Bat X and ATC, both like him, pretty much the same. Steamer, not so much, but it could just be – it's 13 at-bats difference. Still some similarities, all things considered. But massive rank differentials between the three. And maybe that's what you were going to hit on here. But what do you got on Colton Cowser?
Yeah, looking at the three all in one spot again, it's a product of the Bat X being higher on Cowser than other players that it's projecting. Because ATC has him as the 106th hitter, Seamer 138, and then the Bat X has him as a top 100 hitter, 98th. And you kind of got at it. They're pretty in line across the three. Really, the one thing that stands out is Steamer's low on his runs, probably because he might hit fifth for the Orioles, which is a spot with the guys behind him that he should be able to score a lot of runs still. So I don't get the low run projection for Steamer. He has good speed. And yeah, so I guess I did like Cowser a lot because of the stat cast, and that makes sense that the Bat X would be high on him for that reason. But when you have a player who's kind of going this high and his average rank standard deviation is 28, which is pretty high in the other guys going around or ranked in this range, it stood out to me. And hopefully that they let him run the Orioles, because I think Cowser has a lot of speed. And I guess those people are worried about are you worried about a platoon with Cowser? I don't think he would be one to get platooned based on the rest of their team.
He's not near the top of my list, that's for sure. Like, anything can happen there with the depth the Orioles have, but I don't foresee him platooning that much. If it is, it's going to be weak. If that happens, mm-hmm. If I'm drafting Cowser, I'm not planning on a platoon situation.
Yeah, because I'm pretty certain that – oh, yeah, he had 74% of his at-bats versus righties last year, so he was very much a full-time player. So whoever – I heard that at points in the offseason with Cowser, and I kind of shrugged it off. And, yeah, so if he, I think he could fall, because I got him pretty late in a 400. I got him, I think, past pick 200 in January, so I was very happy with that. Only time I drafted Cowser, but – if you need some power and speed, and the average shouldn't kill you. He's projected to be slightly below average, but I don't know. I think he's a solid player, and I'm definitely with the Bat X on his upside.
You got the early season draft on your side there, because his ADP is up to 170 right now in OCs.
Yeah.
So still not bad. Still not bad. TJ Friedl of the Cincinnati Reds should be hit towards the top of the order, healthy right now. For a Reds team that we know can score a lot of runs at home. Two seasons ago, 18 homers, 27 steals, hit .279 over 138 games. Was injured a ton last season. So we're trying to get TJ back in action here. And when you look at the projections, Steamer, again, has been playing a ton, hitting 19 home runs and stealing 18 bags, while ATC and the Bat have him for 15 and 16 or 12 and 16. So the Bat's down on him once again. Compare like similar to the Cowser situation. So what are your thoughts when you look at TJ Friedl, who has a massive differential number there?
Yeah, so his standard deviation amongst the three is 44 spots, which is massive. It's even more than Morel, who had 37. And it's really between Steamer and the Bat X. So this is why I wanted to highlight him. So Steamer has him as the 97th overall hitter. The Bat X has Friedl as the 180th overall hitter. So it's almost twice, it's almost double. And it's 80 runs in Steamer versus 58 for the Bat X, which 22 is a massive difference in a projection system. Seven homers, the speed's kind of there. And then because of the low homer total for Bat X, it's 16 fewer RBIs, 63 to 47. And ATC is basically right in the middle of everything that I said there. And I get why the Bat X does not like Friedl at all. He has some pretty low percentiles for even XBA was 20th percentile. X-Slug was 5th. Barrel rate was 6th. And he kind of has a case of the Kyle Tuckers where his sprint speed is 26th percentile, which I don't know why. I think all of his injuries were like broken bones in his hands and stuff like that. Like, he never had a leg injury last year, Fiedel. So I don't get why his sprint speed would collapse like that. I'm going to try to quickly look up what it's been in the past. Sprint speed, where is it? See, he was like in the 70s prior 2 years, Fiedel, and then he went down to 26th percentile last year, which is kind of odd when you're only 28. So that really was alarming for me. And I think it was Rob DiPietro who pulled it up or brought it up in the Patreon, or the, I guess it was the Discord, was how Friedel's one of the guys who has more homers than barrels. Yep. Over the last few years, he has, in the last two seasons, he has a total of 21 barrels, but he has 31 home runs. Yes, Cincinnati helps. So I think Steamer is just looking at the 18 he had in 2023, the 13 he had last year, and kind of just assuming that's going to stick. But I just don't know. I think it's a fluke that he has that many home runs. I guess he, like, just because the wall is so shallow in Cincinnati, maybe he can get by with doing that, but I don't want to trust that, especially in a 15 you're taking Friedel where you're going to be relying on him. And and with the XBA being 220 and then the sprint speed percentile being so low, like, what's he going to provide you reliably? I just don't know. Yeah. So I'm definitely with the bad X and my pessimism. And I could see why if you're just drafting the Steamer, you might love Friedel, but I'm not buying that projection really.
Yeah. It's a massive difference. Definitely worth, that makes the conversation intriguing. ADP is 260 with Friedel. And it's that home run to fly ball thing, home run to barrel thing that you mentioned. Every time we've ever done a Bloom board, he stands out in that regard. And then you mentioned the other things highlighted there, like the talent is good, the numbers were through the roof, the ability to reciprocate that might be a little more challenging. Let's put it that way. All right, Isak Paredes coming your way here. Isak, we know, really good pull power, disappeared when he went to Chicago for obvious reasons. Now he goes to Houston, where that should be much better again. The projection sites all have him hitting over 20 home runs, but Steamer likes him a ton more. And another one, you have a thing here for the Steamer versus the bat discussions. So what are you seeing here with Isak Paredes, who definitely relies on that pull power?
It's almost the same argument as I just had, or discussion I had for Friedel, because the Steamer has Paredes as the 101st hitter, whereas the Bad X has him as 158th, and ATC is kind of in the middle. It skews, though, towards Steamer. It's 122 for ATC. Yeah, it's a 5-homer difference, which is a lot in projections. It's 15 runs, which is also a lot too, which is kind of surprising, in 12 RBIs. So maybe they're assuming that the power is in the drag down, or the lack of power will drag down the other counting stats for Paredes. But if he hits second in Houston, I'm willing to discount the Bad X in this case. I trust the Bad X with Friedel. I don't with Paredes in this case because of the other circumstances that aren't captured in the projections. Well, they could be, but there's other. So this is when people always talk about double counting things. So what is the projection looking at versus, like, when we do our analysis? So maybe Houston's already accounted for. It is with the Bad X, but they're looking at the awful hard hit for Paredes, which is a reason why I was completely out on him going into the start of the season. Even last year too, I'm like, he's a gimmick hitter with the pull homers. So if hitters can just keep the ball away from him and prevent him from pulling the ball, what's he going to do? Like, he's not that good of a hitter otherwise, if he can't pull the ball, Paredes. But hitting between Altuve and Yordan and Walker, I think it's a great spot for him. So I'm definitely more optimistic like Steamer is, but it's just cool to see how the Statcast play such a big role with the projections.
Yep. Massive, massive difference there indeed. Last one we have here is Jung-Hoo Lee of the San Francisco Giants, a guy that we had a high optimism. Well, people were optimistic for last year. Then he goes and gets hurt, of course, in season. That just deters his whole season. But we look at the projection here. Here we have a trend again. Steamer absolutely loves him. ATC is not as big a fan as Steamer. Bat's kind of closer to ATC than Steamer on this one. But Steamer really, really likes Jung-Hoo Lee. Or like I said, ATC not so much, which is interesting to me, all things considered. So how do you look at the Jung-Hoo Lee thing? Because I'm more on the side of that. Honestly, this is tough because I don't believe he has that much power, but I also think he steals more bases than these projections lead on to. So what are your thoughts on Jung-Hoo Lee?
Yeah, he was definitely one who popped with Steamer because that's all I had when I started drafting. And I saw the projection. I'm like, oh, okay. I could see that he could just volume his way to being valuable. And they have him for 100 more at-bats than ACC in the bad X, which is kind of mind-blowing for someone like this. So it's probably because of the injury that he suffered last year. I think it was a shoulder injury, so that's why the ACC in the bad X won't give him too many at-bats. But to see Steamer 100 at-bats ahead, it's just kind of weird. And then that led to 10 more runs, roughly. About like a 50% increase in homers, 14 versus 9 and 10. 20 more RBIs, so that's a lot. That's why you're going to have a variance of 55 spots, which is one of the highest that I'm sure on the list. But the average across all three is very good. Steamer has the most, not surprising, the highest contribution for his average. Yeah, and I think he's relatively fast in the small sample, so I don't get why he'd only have 10 or so steals. But if he's hitting third, maybe he does run less. But this was, even when he was predicted to hit a leadoff, they had pretty low steal totals for Lee. So I think if he's like the better version of Arias, so I would prioritize Lee over Arias if I needed an average boost. And he goes after Arias too, I think, because Arias is he's the guy who's done it the last few years, which makes sense. But at least with Lee, I think we were talking about Arias that he's projected for 10 and 10, which were his highs in different years of the two stats, whereas Lee could give you at least 10 and 10 in one season. And with good RBIs, hitting third for the Giants, and probably as good, if not better, runs. So yeah, I like Lee. Once the other systems came down, I definitely moved him down a little bit. Or I only have him in one DC because I needed a little average help. But yeah, I think if he's definitely more of a 15 plate as well, because like I doubt there's much of a ceiling for him. So if you need some average help and maybe some runs help as well in a deeper league, I think he's a great target.
Yeah, I agree with you. In 12s, I'm not interested at all. He has an ADP of 236 since March 1st, 10 OOC drafts. And 15s, I get it, because he's better than Arias. I think there's a world where you could see 10 to 15 homers if things click. I'm still closer to the 10 side of it. But he has showcased a little power even before he got hurt last year. In spring, he's showing some pop. They want to hit him third, so the team must think he's got a little more pop than we're led on to believe. The speed, I think, is pretty fair. A perfect world, he's 15-15. I think he's more closer to like 10-15, maybe 10-20 if things go, if they decide to run again in San Francisco. So that's another big question. But batting average is legit. If he hits third, he'll drive in runs. He should score his fair share as well. So, yeah, I think Lee's just fine, but definitely more of a 15 than a 12 in that scenario. All right, we did it. We got through them. Let's nail a couple quick listener questions here for us. In the chat, we had Bill Schmidt say, would you trade Crochet for Jazz in a roto keeper league? That is rich.
That's quite the trade. I have them ranked pretty similarly, so I guess, oh man, they both have risk. That's a tough one.
I think I'd want Jazz, honestly.
Jazz ahead of them.
Pitchers in dynasty keeper leagues just scare me so much because they're, I know hitters are one play away, but pitchers are one pitch away. It's just, I'll take my hitters more often than not.
Well, yeah, for this year, I have Jazz 24, Crochet 26. So that's how close it is. But in keeper, they're both young. I don't know. Maybe I take Jazz. In a keeper, probably lean the position player.
Yep, that's my difference. Like going into the season, I'd probably take Crochet between the two. I don't really have much interest in either at their ADPs. But for a keeper, I think I lean Jazz on that one. All right, we got some questions from the old Twitter bot here. Let me see. All right, first off, Thomas Travato says, what players have you downgraded in your rankings since the Bad X and ATC have come out, and how should we incorporate how rosy Steamer is on some players? First off, let's go with the first question here. How did you what players did you downgrade when the other rankings came out? Like you kind of mentioned, like TJ Friedel was a darling in Steamer. Jung-Hoo Lee was a darling in Steamer. Yeah. What are some guys that shifted for you?
So when I did update my projections, the projections don't drive my rankings like they might with other people. I use them in hand in hand with how I rank my players on my own, and then I compare it. So I didn't want to do a whole lot of overreaction because I used the projections more so as a drafting tool, and then just for information like we're doing here. So I can't think of anyone that I actually moved down a lot. I think Lee was someone I may have moved down a little bit because of how, like I said during his analysis, how good Steamer liked him. Maybe Lawrence Butler, because he's one that stands out too, who's actually in the question. I'm kind of getting ahead to the part two, but Steamer loved Lawrence. And I think we talked about him last time. And the other two aren't as high on him. So there's a couple. I don't have off the top of my head, but it wasn't a lot if I did really make any differences in my rankings.
Yep. To me, like you said, you use yours for what you do. This is obviously a question dictated to you because I'm not putting the sheets together for that. But it does like make you tweak things because when I do so many shows and stuff, I'm always looking at the projections and certain things stand out and show you that maybe I should at least analyze the player more would be an answer for that.
Yep.
Then to the part two that you kind of alluded to, is Jason Dominguez this year's Lawrence Butler?
Well, that's a tough one. I do love Jason. Let me pull up his projections. I think the one thing is the lineup position. That's been my one thing the entire time with him, really, is where does he hit? It seems like Jazz will lead off, which makes sense because Dominguez is still a rookie and Jazz isn't the best leadoff hitter, but he kind of fits like the old school leadoff hitter profile because of his speed. So if something happens where Dominguez just like starts raking and they want to move him up, it could be awesome. But I think the lineup for the Yankees is doesn't really allow that flexibility that Butler had because there's so many. It's so top heavy where with the A's, who else was really going to compete with Butler for the leadoff spot? I mean, Dominguez has the profile. He probably has more speed than Butler. So he could do what Butler does. I just wouldn't really bank on it. You're definitely paying more for Dominguez this year than he did Butler last year because Butler wasn't really drafted that much and he was a fab ad anyway for most teams. Like with Dominguez, you're paying at least a 10th round price and a 15 probably. So it's going to be a little more risky to take that gamble. But, I mean, he has it in him, Dominguez, but it's more of like a 25% chance, I would say, that he actually is this year's Lawrence Butler.
Yeah, right now Butler's ADP is 56, Dominguez 132. So, yeah, you're going to have to pay for it, like you're saying. I think there's a very fair chance Dominguez is a 2020 guy, but that's totally in the bags. I think Butler's even better this year, but to the point of last year's Lawrence Butler, yeah, that's definitely possible. Like you kind of mentioned too, Butler didn't start out the year with the team the way that Jason is. So something else to keep in mind in those comparisons there. Man Bear Hawk, our good buddy, says, why is PCA going so high in drafts? I don't know. I don't agree with it.
What's his ADP right now?
His ADP right now is Crow 141.
Which isn't terrible. So he's the 100th hitter by projections because he's projected for 15 and 29. You won't like hearing this, but it was on one of Waxman's pods. Who's the loud mouth that always talks up guys for fab? I can't think of his name.
Uncle
Gecko.
Tim. Oh, Gecko.
Yeah. It's not his real name, but that's what his Twitter. Yeah. I can't think of his name right now. Some people might know who I'm talking
about. Cerebro.
Yeah, Mark Cerebro. That's it. Thank you. Yep. Very good player. Very good player. So I respect Mark a lot. It was the pod that Cerebro was on. I don't know if Cerebro was actually said this, but it was a good point. So you look at guys like Andrés Giménez and Bryson Stott. They were top 100 picks last year. But now they're projected for like the same numbers as they were last year, but they're going like 80 picks later. Oh, yeah. And it's because of the speed. And this is what Pete Crow Armstrong projects as. He's like a 15-30 guy, which is what those guys are. But he's going ahead of them, I think, because of the upside. But also that's keeping me hesitant from drafting Pete Crow Armstrong at this price is because he's not going to hit the top of the lineup. And lineup position is a big thing for me, which is kind of – I was kind of saying with Dominguez as well. If Dominguez hits leadoff, I'm going to be all in. He could also move out of the spot. But PCA is not going to move at least anytime soon hit into the top of the lineup for the Cubs. They have too much talent at the top. So I think people just see like the juice, the homers and the speed. But yeah, a lot has to go right for him to really, I think, pay off that draft price. And I'd rather just draft someone else for speed later.
Yeah, I'm with you. And if I go by just the hitters right now in OCs, PCA is 84th out of the hitter pool. You mentioned he's 100th in the ranking. So he's going a little early, but yeah, I can't stomach it. He's better than Arraez, of course, because his average, he's a rabbit. He's better than Jacob Young. He'll have more power, but there's other things I'd rather do at that point in the draft that don't involve Pete Crow Armstrong. I'll say that much, the nicest way I can. And Man Bear Hawk's a Cubs fan, by the way. Jeff Biddle says, curious what you all think about Jacob Wilson's batting average for this season. Steamer and Baddex are not in agreement. This is a guy I almost put on the outline, so I'm kind of glad that Jeff mentioned him here. When you look at Jacob Wilson, playing time is very similar, power similar, but yeah, as mentioned, Steamer, ATC, and the Baddex do not agree on batting average. And when we talk Jacob Wilson, batting average is kind of the appeal to drafting Jacob Wilson. So what are your thoughts on that one, Ben?
Yeah, so he has a 12 versus 17 in the weighted average between the two. So like 50% difference between them. But in terms of actual average, the Baddex, wow, 268 or 269 versus 287. So 20 points is a lot.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, so the K rate projects for 10.8 with Steamer versus 11.8 for the Baddex. That's not a big difference.
It's got to be stat cast. Wilson has no power.
Yeah, so, and then
it's got to be factoring that in somewhere.
Yeah, but even the BABIP is 10 points. So I guess so 10 points of BABIP is 10 points off the average. Okay, and then I guess a point in swing and K rate is also another 10 percentage points, which it could be. Six homers versus eight. So the homers would. Having more homers would help your BABIP, so that kind of makes sense as well. But yeah, since it's like you said, since it's Statcast driven, the Baddex, that would explain why they'd be a little less optimistic with Wilson's average. But I don't know. I think 280 is relatively safe to hope for with him.
Yeah, I think 280 is relatively safe. And the one thing we always say about projections, especially Derek Cardi's, young players don't usually fare well. Mm-hmm. So there could be some other juice in his system that changes things a bit. It's the best way I'll say it when it comes to young players. Dave Sawa says, why does the Baddex hate batting average so much? Is that a trend you've noticed, Ben?
I don't know, but actually with average, let me pull up the pivot table. So the Baddex, they're actually, it's not that bad, actually. He must be looking at the wrong guy. So when I look at the weighted average, which is used for the Z-scores, the Baddex has a 2.2 average weighted average amongst hitters with 300 plus at bats, which is actually higher than Steamer. Steamer is at 2. And then ATC is the highest, surprisingly, with a 2.37 average weighted average. So it's maybe he's just looking at the wrong guys. That's maybe what I would say. Because this is saying, as with the systems as a whole, it's actually almost the highest Baddex. It's more than Steamer, which is actually surprising considering how Steamer likes all the other hitting stats a lot more than the other two.
All right. Yeah, I figured we were on to something, but if it's that close, not bad. Not bad. Yeah. All right. Well, we did it. We went through another round of players on the projections, and there's a trend that the Baddex is not lining up with a lot of stuff. And Steamer's very optimistic in general, is what kind of that's the laziest approach to looking at this. Obviously, there's more to all of these, but it seemed like most arguments came down to Steamer versus the bat on a lot of these, which is interesting to see. And I'd like to, that'd be a fun round table to get them like on a panel together, just ask questions on how these things came to be. I don't know if I'll ever get that luxury, but maybe we will someday. Before we head out of here, Ben, what are your, any final thoughts before we call it a day?
No, it's I always love doing this show. It's really cool to dig into the projections at this level. And, they're not the end all be all, of course, like we said that with the projections, they're all going to be wrong to some degree. So it's just maybe they will give you reason to be more optimistic versus a player that you're not going into draft season versus, or maybe it brings you down on something that you're really high on. So it's good to look at different sources and get as much info as possible.
Yeah, I like it a lot because even I'm not a statistics genius, but I know the more samples you can use to differentiate and get a better answer to something along the line. I think I'm close to what I'm trying to say there is better for the whole. So having, you know, three different sources and compared to just one out the gate with Steamer and putting them together and kind of getting an idea in that regard is a good thing. And it's kind of a checks and balances almost. Might not be right, might not be wrong, but puts things in perspective a little more, I guess. Like you said, if there's a standout, you can check in more and so on and so forth. So yeah, always a really good exercise to go through these. It's a shame we don't trust pitching projections, rightfully so. But that would be an interesting one to see how those variances take place, because I can imagine that being all over the wall on some of those, just based on, I don't even know how to viably trust a pitching production. But we'll wrap it up there. Again, make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Intric. We'll be back with you guys next week. We'll figure out a new topic to get you ready as we are, you know, going into the next week, and maybe we'll pick Ben's brain. He's going to be drafting a main event team in about a week, about 9 days. He'll be in the mansion, which is already going to be hilarious to begin with. Like, I want to send Ben like one of those detective pens with a camera on it, just to, like, cruise around. I want the whole lay of the land, essentially. But I was told I have to pay for that from MTM himself. But yeah, Ben will be in the mansion. He'll be drafting a main event team. It will be madness. It's in the title for a reason. And that'll be exciting to talk about, and much, much more coming your way. So, all right, everybody, that's what's Bench with Bubba, episode 750. Hope you all have a great weekend. Catch you all next time.